From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, 37 seconds. That's all I'll say about that right now. But what a program we have for you tonight. And happy birthday to Doug in Ohio. Of course, a million Dougs are probably saying, hey, thank you. 62 years old. Happy birthday, Doug. Avid coast-to-coast listener. Tsunami alerts tonight for California and Hawaii. A powerful earthquake hitting near Chile, causing buildings to sway in the capital of Santiago. The 8.3 magnitude tremor centered off the coast about 144 miles northwest of the capital. Five people are now known to have died. 1 million residents have been evacuated from the coastal areas, and there are reports of panic in some of the cities there. An 8.3 is big. But tsunami alerts in California and in Hawaii. At least 18 people now have been killed in flash flooding in two locations in southern Utah. Rescue workers recovered bodies of two people in Arizona as well. Sad situation. A Texas high school freshman said that he was arrested after one of his teachers said that a homemade clock that he had brought to school looked like a bomb. 14 years old, his name is Ahmed Mohammed. He had been suspended from the MacArthur High School. Police say that Mohammed would not be charged with any crime, and they consider the case closed. Now, I guess the teacher should have done a little bit better checking, but I can understand the paranoia of a teacher. I can't fault the teacher when they see, you know, something like that, a homemade clock-looking thing coming into a school. I can't blame the teacher at all. It was a mistake, obviously, but I don't blame the teacher. Well, the debates tonight, the second round of the GOP debates tonight, and boy, did they sling mud back and forth with Donald Trump and everyone else. It was really weird. I mean, he found himself once again the lightning rod at the Republican presidential race in California as he tangled on the stage with his rivals. I mean, he'd got to be somewhat comical. Let's check in with Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Even though they talked about a lot of issues, John, this was almost out of hand.
You know, Jake Tapper tends to be really permissive about things like that. So, and, you know, I think CNN, frankly, was just, you know, talk about, you know, just like yellow journalism, the way they conducted this. I mean, a lot of the substantive questions were really never asked of anybody. But I think, you know, when you look at winners and losers or who benefited, who lost on this, I think that Trump still maintains his position. I think Jeb Bush hurt himself, maybe mortally, in this thing, saying how his brother kept the country safe. Essentially, you know, talking about, you know, the great legacy of the Iraq War. I mean, you had Republicans like Rand Paul, who I think did a little bit better in this debate, actually, eventually, stating that the war was a mistake from the get-go, the chaos in the Middle East that exists, you know, these interventions that we have, foreign wars, have backfired on the U.S., and he wouldn't put any boots on the ground. Now, that was not a consensus opinion of the rest of them. I thought Carly Fiorina, who made it this time to the, you know, the primetime debate, I think, you know, had a line on Trump that he set himself up for by saying that her, you know, she had an unelectable face, essentially. But I think overall her appearance was too intense. I think that the appearance in front of that camera, you know, I mean, they needed to, you know, like, you know, change the angle or something, because she looked like her eyes were ready to, you know, kind of pop out of her head. There was so much intensity. I think that hurt her in this debate. I think the one that really, I think if there's going to be a bump by anybody, I think it was Chris Christie, who, again, kind of refereed between Trump and...
And Rubio didn't look too bad.
No, I think Rubio was always a very sensible candidate, articulate. And Ted Cruz, whether you hate him or you like him, you know, he's probably the most intelligent and the most well-rehearsed in front of looking into that camera and explaining things. But I think the loser in the debate, I think, tonight, I mean, where the momentum seemed to be gathering was Ben Carson. And I think he looked weak. He sort of mumbled. I don't think that he really helped himself in this debate at all. So overall, I think that things stay the same. I think you'll see more dropouts in the days ahead, because I think it's pretty clear that, you know, many of these candidates cannot sustain themselves financially.
Okay, and track John's work by going to his website, onlinecolumnist.com, which is part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. 3 days after John F. Kennedy was shot and killed in Dallas, U.S. intelligence officials told President Lyndon Johnson that they had confirmed that assassin Lee Harvey Oswald had recently traveled to Mexico to visit both the Cuban and Soviet embassies, according to a half-century-old briefing memo declassified on Wednesday. I don't believe it. As a matter of fact, I saw a picture many years ago when I was a kid, 13, 14 years old, that they had published in the newspaper that purportedly showed Lee Harvey Oswald coming out of the Mexican embassy. Didn't even look like him at all. And I still will always believe that there was a conspiracy involved and there was more than one gunman, and that Oswald indeed may have been the patsy. I think it was a setup from the get-go. Is the Federal Reserve going to raise U.S. interest rates? Well, that's easy. The answer one day is yes, but it won't be tomorrow, I don't think. But they're going to be meeting tomorrow, and we shall see what happens there. For the second day in a row, sunspot AR2415 is crackling with minor C-class solar flares. But what else is going on up there? Let's check in with astronomer Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. The blood moon is approaching, Stephen.
Yes, George, we're so excited here. Get a load of this, folks. 10 days, 18 hours, and 59 minutes. The skies will darken, George, for one of the most amazing events that we've been talking about here on Coast. The blood moon, the full harvest moon, and the supermoon. And just as a little treat to our listeners, here's some details, and they can learn much more, of course, by going to drsky.com. But, George, the Americas, the United States, continental United States, everyone east of the Mississippi gets to see this eclipse in its entirety. The moon will magically rise in its partial phases for most of the Mountain West and the western USA. But here's some specifics. No matter where you're listening, just convert the times accordingly. The partial phases begin 9.07 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 27th. The total phase, George, of what everybody's excited about, the blood moon, the spirituality, the science, is 10.11 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And the maximum of this eclipse, 10.47 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And, George, 72 minutes, we experience this deep, dark totality.
Exciting.
And what makes this eclipse so amazing, and this is incredible, we haven't seen a supermoon total eclipse since 1982. The next one is in 2033. The moon's going to be 14% larger, 30% brighter. And just in case you needed more stimulation, folks, on this, these eclipses, George, happen in what they call Ceres cycles. And this one, we call it Ceres 137. It's a series of 78 eclipses over about 1,388 years. This is number 26 of 78. So everybody can naturally learn more at drsky.com. And, George, I'm excited to be with you the following Saturday for the conference in Scottsdale. And then check it out, folks. We have a big event in Scottsdale for the total eclipse, if you're interested and live within that area. So great stuff, George, happening as we're live at the Reno Air Races to update everybody on our photorecon.net site.
I love it. Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate it. And I will. I'll see you down in Scottsdale in a couple weeks. Full information on that at coasttocoastam.com. Great event on the afterlife coming up. Now get up to our website. If you have the capability, whether you with your smartphone, with our apps, or just at your desktop, take a look at the highlight reel picture of a fisherman near Fukushima in Japan who has caught the world's biggest fish I have ever seen. Personally, I don't know if it's Photoshopped or not, but Lex has posted a Insta poll up there when you click the picture, which will ask you if you think that this may be a mutant because of it being in the waters of Fukushima. You have got to look at this picture. It is absolutely gory, this fish. I can't say it any other way. Look at the picture, then vote on our Insta poll, if you would, because I'm curious to see what you think. Okay, up next, we're going through all kinds of things over the next year or so. So we're bringing in Greg Hunter from USAWatchdog.com to put all of this into perspective for us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Greg Hunter, our old friend, has had years of network experience as an investigative correspondent, working for ABC News, Good Morning America for years, and most recently worked for CNN as well. And Greg is a tough reporter. Heads up, USAWatchdog.com. And Greg, so many things to talk with you about. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I got to get your reaction on tonight's GOP debate number two. What'd you think?
I thought Trump won. Fortunately, I think Rand Paul didn't do that well. Kasich didn't do very well. Carson did okay. He's just not a very... I don't think he hurt himself. I just don't think he helped. People got to like him for what he is. Rubio did well.
Yeah, he did. He was strong.
Fiorina did well. Cruz did well. I mean, you know, if Cruz wouldn't... I think Trump, Cruz... And this is the scary thing about Trump. He can win.
He could win. He could win. He's a little brash.
You know, here I'm reading the USA Today, you know, where they have this, Bob Beckel and Cal Thomas. Oh, they agree on something. They agree that, you know, the title is Slay Trump the Monster. I'm thinking, well, you know, there might as well be, hey, we don't want Trump cutting in on our action. Because, you know, I've said for years that the Republicans and Democrats just rip us off, and it's just like Britt Hume was on talking about, well, you know, America has this fever, and, you know, we're waiting for this fever to go away. And I'm thinking to myself, what do you mean a fever? You know, we need a more serious candidate. What do you mean a serious candidate? This guy's a billionaire. And the problem is he can't be bought. And most everybody on this stage, probably with the exception of Ben Carson and a few others, are all bought.
That's right.
They're super PAC people.
Yeah, Ben Carson
is
not.
A candidate that is corrupt, a super candidate will tell us he's going to close the border and then never does. A super candidate that what? I mean, it's Jeb Bush did not help himself.
No, he does just not have the finesse to get this done. I think people are tired, though.
Pace.
Yeah, but I think people are also tired of the dynasty. Do you want another Bush in? For number three?
If he had a good case, he likes Common Core, which I think is common stupid. I can't remember who it was. She lived in China, grew up in China, and she says, you know, Common Core reminds me of what they try to do in China, you know, mass education. Fiorina did great. Especially when she did the baby, I dare them to look at the videos of them.
She held her. But let me ask you a quick Trump question. Do you think he's a little too brash? I mean, I thought, for example, his remarks about Rand Paul's looks were a little classless.
Yes, but you know what? People are it's kind of like, remember the Howard Stern movie? And in the movie, there's this scene
Private
where
Parts.
They say about Howard Stern, he's playing himself, I think. And it says, I think it's Paul Giamatti or somebody, he says, well, you know, half the audience hate him. I said, okay. And the other half don't hate him. I said, well, why does the other half stick around? Because they want to see what he's going to say.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. But, I mean, to be presidential... Should you be embarrassing people and putting them down like that? I mean, that to me, that's not funny.
He backed off on Fiorina, though. He missed a moment there. He could have said, "What I said was mean, and I'm sorry." He should have said that. He should have done that. He would have vaulted in the polls. He would have done that. But you know, nobody tells him he doesn't have a handler.
No.
He doesn't have somebody that says, "Don't do that. Do this. Don't do that." The poll says that he may even do something good for America. I mean, this whole Iran deal, he's absolutely right, and it's not even a deal. It's a capitulation.
Look, I gotta tell you something, and this is very important.
I'll tell you something, too.
Because I had a guest on a couple days ago, and he thinks that the Iranian situation has been distorted, that the media is being led down the primrose path, that the statements of the Ayatollah have been taken out of context. Now, with that being said,
he wrote a book about destroying Israel.
I've got a dear friend who is Iranian, came to this country. He's got his own business. He's doing very well for himself. I asked him tonight. I said, Mike, everything that we hear about the Ayatollah Khomeini, death to America and everything else, is that true or is that been misinterpreted and we're being tricked with subtitles? He said, it's absolutely true. He said, George, they force kids in school, little kids, to say three times a day, death to America. And we're going to give this guy the opportunity to have a nuke? Are we crazy?
Listen, George, this whole thing is a scam and a sham. And when John Kerry, I heard him say it, sat in front of Congress and said, I don't have access to the side deals. Whoa. What are you, side deals to inspect Iran's nuclear sites. That's a side deal? Excuse me. Isn't that the main deal? Isn't that what this dog and pony show with France and Germany and UK and Russia and China has all been about them not getting nuclear weapons, not about their civilian facilities, really, in all this. It's about military nuclear application. And then he says, I don't have access to the side deals. I used to hear the press, well, you know, it's the UN. It's confidential, and it's not John Kerry's to get. Excuse me. Was the UN at the table for us? No, that was John Kerry. He doesn't know what's in the deal. He doesn't really. He doesn't know that they can basically get their own samples.
Yeah.
And the Iranians have made public. And I've said this on my program, and I want to tell you something. I really do. I'm not saying I'm being a smart guy. I want to tell you something when I get done.
Okay.
But on my show, I've been saying, I hate to say this, but if you want to know what's in the deal, just listen to the Iranians. Because they've been saying, you're not going to inspect our nuclear sites, and they're not. And then they came out and made statements, we're not going to issue these permits. Top-ranking people.
And they mean it.
People, we're not going to issue these permits.
Yeah.
And that we're going to keep enriching uranium. And when the sanctions are done, we're done. And we want our money. And that's the deal.
Yeah. That's
the
deal.
That is the deal.
It is just crazy.
We didn't get our hostages back. We didn't even get them to say, okay, listen, we'll give you $100 billion or $150 billion. There's a couple of different numbers there. You at least got to stop funding Hamas and Hezbollah to attack Israel. That's a proxy war. You guys should stop that.
And they won't.
Nothing was said.
If anything, they'll do it and spend more.
I do want to say this, though. You guys, I want to tell you, I started doing videos in June of 2012. I've got 21 million video views on YouTube.
That's great.
And when I first started out, you and Lisa Lyon were so kind to have me on. I was getting, like, no traffic. I was just a former, you know, CNN, ABC correspondent, and I was starting my own site. And you guys were so kind and so nice to have me on, and you're nice and kind to have me on now, and I'm very honored and grateful to be on your show.
Well, thank you, Greg. You do. Listen, you know why you're on the show? Because you're good at what you do.
Oh, thank you.
That's why you're on. Believe me, if you weren't good, we wouldn't have invited you.
You're very kind. But the Trump, you listen, this is what they're fearful of. They're fearful of Donald Trump winning this, and he could win this because people, it's just like that, you know, movie in what network, you know, I'm mad as hell,
not going to take it anymore.
People network. Are just like, hey, what? I mean, they're just sick of it, and it's he's hitting a nerve, and the nerve is that people are tired of the BS. I mean, he's right about the anchor baby.
So let's assume, though, he picks Rubio as his running mate. What do you think?
He'll pick maybe Rubio or Cruz. It won't be two white guys. I don't think it'd be Fiorina, although she might be his national security advisor. I don't know.
Yeah, well, they've got to make up.
Well, I think they did right at the end there. I don't know if you watched this thing, but you know, she went over to him and shook his hand because he did. He bent for Donald Trump, for him to say, you have a beautiful face. You have a lovely woman. Ooh, he basically said, basically, that was his way of saying,
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
without admitting it.
He did. You know, I don't know if it helped him enough.
What about Carson as a running mate?
I think the Republicans would, I'm not a Republican, and I'm not a Republican strategist, but I think he's a shoo-in for the Senate. You know, pick a state, you can run there, and we'll back you. He'll win.
Yes, hands down.
He's only 62. He's not that old. I mean, he, you know, spends, you know, some time in the Senate, and you know, I don't know. He still may win. Let me tell you, it's a long way.
There's a long way.
He still may win. Like Rubio looked great. Incidentally, he'd be if he's not a running mate, he'd be a secretary.
It's the Democratic end that I think is way up in the air. I have no idea who's going to get that.
Hillary Clinton's in. Listen, I said this when she was running all by herself. I made the prediction. Kay Hagan, I live in North Carolina, that Kay Hagan would not be reelected. And then they even had a third-party candidate. And I said, she just won't. She's lost it. She'll lose. And Hillary Clinton is in deep, deep trouble. I don't know. We're kind of all over the place. But she's in deep trouble with this email server thing. And let me tell you why she's in deep trouble.
Okay, I'm coming up to the break. Okay. So let's talk about that when we come back. Then we'll also talk about something that is going to affect everybody listening to this program tonight financial turbulence. So you just hold on, strap yourself in, and don't fall out. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you. We'll take your phone calls with Greg Hunter next hour. Greg, let's finish up a little bit about Hillary, the emails, and the servers, and then let's talk about this financial situation. But go ahead. You were going to...
Well, here's my theory, and it's just my theory. It's well documented the Clintons and the Obamas hate each other. I mean hate. I mean with a capital H, capital A, capital T, capital E, they hate each other. Okay?
Hmm.
And it was well documented in the Blood Feud book. Now, where did the server story first originate? Well, Trey Gowdy, looking into Benghazi, knew about it, but did not release it. Guess who did? The first release, that Valerie Jarrett at the Obama White House. Now, what do you think the odds are that Valerie Jarrett would come in for a cup of coffee with the president and have a 15-minute meeting and go, oh, by the way, Mr. President, I dropped a bomb on Hillary Clinton.
On her own. No way.
And she's going to be the presumptive nominee and take your place in the leader of the party. That's okay, isn't it? That didn't happen without him knowing it. The other thing was the Clinton Foundation. Remember that scandal that got started about the allegations of play to pay and bribery and that kind of thing, and him getting speeches and all that? You know where that story came from?
Who leaked that?
The Valerie Jarrett at the Obama White House.
Interesting.
Now, let's fast forward here. Do you think that President Obama is going to allow her to be president and control the Justice Department and the IRS? Do you think that he would allow that and maybe interrupt his, you know, his post-presidential retirement in Hawaii? Do you think that's going to happen?
No.
The other thing is, that's right. And the other thing is General Petraeus. Now, he was the head of the CIA. He was a decorated general. Of course, you know, he had an affair with his biographer, you know, a tawdry affair.
Told her a little too much, right?
That's right. But he did not impugn national security. He had a stack of papers in his desk. He had to plead to a felony. He got a $100,000 fine, his 2-year probation. He almost went to jail just for that. Now we fast forward and we find out, just this week, that the information on her servers has probably ended up on Google servers. And, of course, now we do know that there is classified and at least a couple of top secret documents. You don't have to have a bunch. You can have one.
That's all you need. Somewhere in the cloud.
That's ended up on Google servers now. And then they're talking with the person that had these servers in a bathroom, supposedly, that they're talking about a deal where he gets, immunity to testify. And let me tell you, even with what Nixon did with the tapes and the erasing and whatever, Watergate, he got anywhere close to any kind of national security issue. This Hillary Clinton server, where she is the head of the State Department, which interfaces with the NSA, the CIA, the White House, the 70,000-80,000 people around the world at embassies around the world, and she's in a key position. She interfaces with the Speaker of the House. She interfaces with the Majority Leader, the Minority Leader. She interfaces. It's a key. It's more important than the Vice President, really.
And it's much bigger than just
emails. Oh, my God. And she had a private server that was not encrypted, that was uberly hackable. Oh, George, I'm surprised they don't go out on the campaign trail and just cuff her. Because there is no way that she gets out of this one. There's no way. And the president is not going to allow her to get out of this. He's not, at the very least, she will not be president of the United States. And just anecdotal evidence. I had a friend of mine, a female friend who dates one of my cousins, a good friend of mine, also as well. And a year ago, Hillary Clinton came. Oh, I love her. I think she'd make a great president. Okay, well, fine. I'm neither Democrat nor Republican. Okay, great. So this time, the term Hillary Clinton came up. I said, she asked me, says, how's it going? I said, oh, God, it's going terrible. She went, I think a woman should be president, but not that woman. And this is a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat woman.
They're already changed.
A little evidence, but already there's changed. No way she's going to be president. I just don't see any way in the world Obama is going to allow her to be president, because after all these bombs dropped on her head, this is my theory, there's nothing, paybacks, as they say in the hood, is a tough thing, right?
Yeah.
It's actually, they say something else, but...
Well, but you're on the radio.
But, I don't think he's going to allow that to happen. That's my theory. But what she did relative to what other people have done is, off the charts. I mean, she impaired national security. In my humble opinion and opinion of national security experts, that she has impaired we just don't know to what degree.
We shall see soon enough, won't we?
Yes.
Greg, the Federal Reserve folks, they met today and they're meeting tomorrow. They're supposed to talk about interest rates again. I do not think tomorrow they will raise them. Not at this point. What do you think?
Well, they shouldn't. But then again, when will they? The banks want the rates to rise, just to let you know. And I just had Michael Pinto on, who's a money manager, a really smart guy. And I also had David Stockman, former White House budget director, on. Both of them say basically the same thing, is that they should raise rates. They need to raise rates. David Stockman says they're going to raise rates before the end of the year. If it's not this time, they're going to have to raise them. They're going to have to raise rates, because if they don't, what happens? Everybody thinks, well, they'll never raise rates.
Right. No, they're going to go up. I just don't know when.
They may. If they do raise rates, I've been saying this for a long time, George. If they raise rates, they intend to crash the economy. They intend to take the stuff out.
They're going
to
tank it.
Other thing, the IMF, not the IMF, the World Bank said, and this is how dicey the economy is. This is why none of this came up in the debates, which is bizarre. None of this came up in the debates, how absolutely frightful the situation is. We have never been here before. There is no time in history where any country has printed this much money. It's gone all over the world. Actually, we printed bonds. And the big problem is the bonds. And let's just go to school here, for we've been told that debt is money. And I passed this by David Stockman. He says, you're absolutely right. Debt is money, and debt is an asset. We're going to find out neither is true. Debt is money, Federal Reserve notes. Note means financial instrument. And bonds, debt, an asset. And we're going to find out they're a liability. And the problem with all the debt, and there are hundreds of trillions of dollars in bonds, they are never going to get repaid. There is no way they can be repaid.
They can't be paid back.
They cannot.
They can. You can go out and refinance them and pay more interest.
We've done that many times. And then what happens if they have, I asked David Stockman about this, about QE4, about more money printing. Well, if they do, it won't work. It won't work this time. And we're at this juncture where we've been told, remember, 2 years ago, we're going to raise rates in 6 months. Well, 6 months, we're going to raise rates in 6 months. Well, 6 months later, they told us at the beginning of this year, going to raise rates in June. Well, nope, that didn't happen either. Now in June, it's going to be September. Well, the little boy that cried wolf, right? So we're reaching this juncture. At a bizarre time in financial history, and we've just had the biggest double top ever in the stock market, the biggest. And
well, if rates go up, you're going to see the stock market plummet.
Well, they say that they will do this. This is what Michael Pinto brought up, that they there's a big myth on Wall Street. They'll be one and done, and that's a nice rhyme, but it's not going to happen. They want to normalize rates. The banks actually want rates to go up because they want to make more money on the spread.
Of course.
But the other thing that here's the other thing that was kind of weird in the debate, and I wrote this down. They were talking about things that were wrong or could go wrong, and I don't know if you saw this or not, but I stopped and I backed it up on the DVR. And Trump leans over to the microphone and says, collapse of the economy. Whoa! Mm-hmm. Boy, that's a little bit more than a Freudian slip.
And he should know he's a businessman, right?
The Chinese are in big trouble. I mean, David Stockman brought up the fact that they've got a $28 trillion debt problem. Now, we have a 19, they keep saying 18, but they've stopped counting. We have an $19 trillion in unfunded, just pure debt. And nobody is being told the truth about any of this. And these bonds that they have, you should listen to this interview. He says they take these bonds, and then they borrow money, and then they leverage that, and then it's a daisy chain of leverage and leverage and leverage. And the problem with the bonds is that when they are unpayable, I mean, the bank's going to be on a mad dash for real collateral, I think. Land, houses. You just had the New Year, Stacey, whatever her name, talking about the new program for the Federal Reserve, or you can sell your house and you don't have to move. That's collateral. And I'm telling you that people are going to be in for a rude awakening who have a Social Security or a government pension or a military pension or you name it. I mean, the country is well beyond broke. Then Chris Christie did bring that up tonight, that we have all these unfunded liabilities in the 72% of the budget, and we're in deep, deep trouble.
When
I
does
mean,
the bubble go, Greg? Is it going to be like 2007, 2008?
Oh, it'll be, listen, the next time it goes, we've had all these warnings from the IMF, and this is the thing that you don't, that they don't focus on the mainstream media or the financial press, and the IMF has been warning the World Bank. The World Bank just came out and said that if you raised rates, if you did, warning the Federal Reserve not to raise rates because it could cause, quote, turmoil and panic. We're talking about a quarter of a percent. This is the World Bank. This is an official, this is an official warning. The IMF, Christine Lagarde, also has warned the Federal Reserve not to raise rates. And by the way, if, I don't know if people know this, but Christine Lagarde was the reason why she's the head of the IMF, who, incidentally, she's thinking about stepping down. Well, she's 57 years old, and you don't want that job anymore? You don't want to be the head of the International Monetary Fund? You just don't like
it? It's a great job, yeah.
And eat at the best meal. But she worked in a law firm that did nothing but derivatives. And that's another, you know, piece of,
well, that's what caused the bubble in 2007-8, right?
We had about $700 trillion in derivatives, right? And derivatives have no standards, they have no guarantees, there is no oversight. What could go wrong?
It's a bet. That's what it is. It's a bet instrument, isn't it?
It's right. It's a bet instrument, and it's and now the according to the Bank of International Settlements, it's just the official number. Now it's a quadrillion, and we went from 700 around 700 trillion, whatever number you like to use, 700 trillion, now to a quadrillion. Some people say it's more than twice that amount. They don't really even know how many debts there are out there. I know the U.S. banking system has plus 200 trillion of these debt bets. I mean, it's what's going on in debt in the debt market dwarfs the stock market and dwarfs the forex market, dwarfs all these markets, the debt markets, the bonds, the treasuries, the gilts, euro bonds, whatever. All this debt around the world is just exponential. People say, well, we printed money. Well, actually, we printed bonds. Wait until they try to cash in those bonds. That's when they're going to have to print tons of money.
As you look at September, what's left of it, the next couple weeks, we're told that September could be horrible. They cite the Jewish Shemitah, which is a seven-year cycle. And every 7 years, something horrible happens. It's not necessarily financial. But do you think this is the month?
Well, I think that what could happen is that they, set the table, and people don't realize they super glued all the dishes to the table, and then somebody's going to come up and say, hey, y'all, watch this, try to pull that tablecloth out from under in October, and you can see a giant crash. Jim Sinclair, famed gold investor, says we've had these gyrations where, we had 1,000 points down at the beginning, in the end of August or beginning of September, and then, we have 300 points up and 300 points down, this gyration. Everybody thinks that they can't raise rates, but I think they may. And I think they may, because maybe they're going to try to control the crash, and this is the month they're going to try to do it in. I think they would more likely try to control the crash after harvest season, after the Christmas season. But I don't know. I don't know how dicey this all is. We're in uncharted territories. We're off the charts. Do I think it could be September? Well, I hate to predict the end of the world because you're only going to be right once, but I think the math is awful. And this is not just a Shemitah. It's a super Shemitah. It's 49 years. It's 7777777s in a row. I had Jonathan Kahn on. He was talking about
it. Yeah, I did too. He's great. Blood moons.
This is the period coming up. It may not happen on that day,
the window's there.
Sure, and the other thing is that this is, the Fed is in a damned if they do, damned if they don't scenario. And that is, if they raise rates, ding, 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 the bell rings, it's not going to be a one and done. It's going to be an attempt to normalize rates. It'll be other rates. Back in, 2004, 2005 to 2006, I think they raised rates up to 5%, right? Remember, they raised a quarter of
That's
a percent
right.
every quarter or every meeting. And they're talking about raising it to 1.6%, which the whole other thing about the economy is that it's propped up by fraud, George. The fraud is stunning. It's a Forex. They just convicted banks on Forex charges, rigging the Forex. Well, they, of course, they didn't convict any of the people. They just convicted the furniture, the shareholders, the banks, the glass, the carpet. No individual went to jail. They also had convictions on LIBOR. Now people are squealing, you know, over in Europe where they had these LIBOR and where they fired the underlings, but really it was the upper crust. This is rigging, you know, the Forex market is, what, $4 to $5 trillion a day. The LIBOR market is up to $300-$500 trillion in interest rates set off the London interbank offered rate. And the fraud is the accounting since 2009, FASB, you can Google this, April 2009, they suspended counting rules, and they said that, you know, any asset you have, and the banks did great on this, any asset you have on your books, you can count for whatever you think you'll get for it in the future. And, you know, if they rigged the Forex market, they rigged the gold and silver market, and the evidence is there. Paul Craig Roberts, you know, the guy that invented Reaganomics and his PhD in economics and former assistant treasury secretary, laid out the case for how they're doing all these paper shorts. And last but not least, the other big fraud is the whole robo-signing thing. I think I've talked about that. All that stuff, they sold liar loans. That's fraudulent. You know, people just came up with just no money down, liar. They lied about all their financial abilities.
They didn't care. They didn't care.
They packaged the liar loans into securities. That's security fraud. Then they rated the liar loans and the securities to AAA when indeed it was not. And then when it all blew up, they committed forgery and perjury, which they called robo-signing, which is they're just people signing fast. No, they were creating names, you know, signatures to create a promissory note so they go back and take back these houses in many states. And that's fraud on the court. I mean, you think you pay for your house in 30 years. You do not. The day you close and you write George Norrie on your promissory note, that is a paid in full. You have to make the payments then to the bank, and they can take it back if you stop. But that's your payment. Otherwise, how could they collateralize all these payments? And then you can't take that ink where George Norrie signed it. You can't make a copy of that because that's the that's the original document. That's what it is. Just like you can't make a copy of a $100 Federal Reserve note. You can't make a copy.
Oh, you do that, you're in trouble.
Same thing with the price. That's why they had to have people robo-sign it to create documents. So the economy, and people don't realize how, and you can, I mean, they have admitted to fraud. They have admitted to laundering money for drug cartels and Iran and all the, they've admitted the economy is being propped up on massive amounts of fraud and manipulation.
Some
that
people, Greg,
sure.
Some people are still in their foreclosed homes because the mortgage companies can't find the documents.
Well,
that's amazing.
What they really don't want to do is they don't want to foreclose on the dang thing because they don't want to realize the loss, and they want to say, oh, this house is worth whatever it is, you know, right? The accounting rules are suspended. And if we really did have a recovery, would we need all this QE, this money printing, this bond buying? And which, is, incidentally, all those bonds are sitting on the Fed books. Now, listen, this is like they're an accessory after the fact. Think about this. You know, this is fraud. This is fraud packaged and rated by the banks that the Fed has bought for 100 cents and in some cases, 100 plus cents on the dollar, and it's sitting on their books. They're accessory to fraud after the fact.
Are you saying that it's as bad as what it was 7 years ago?
Oh, worse. Are you kidding? The debt's bigger. The debt's bigger. The leverage is bigger. The crimes are bigger. I mean, 7 years ago, if you said, well, the banks are committing fraud, this is come on. You know, remember when, they actually had people like Bloomberg say, oh, they did nothing wrong. Well, they pled to so many cases, you can't even say that anymore. And then, you know, then you had Eric Holder, the attorney general, saying, oh, well, you know, no bank is too big to jail. He said that a couple of years ago. Well, that's not true. Not a single big bank.
All right, hold on, Greg. We're going to take the break, and then we're going to come back and take calls with you next.